At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two on this Tuesday, and Marcus Hirsch joining us from the Daily Racing Forum. And Marcus had a busy week, both on the domestic front, covering the news in Chicagoland, and on the international front, following Royal Ascot and its aftermath. Marcus, good morning.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. And wanted to get to you, and I'm glad I waited. As the Arlington story and the ITHA, the negotiation process, it seemed like things were going to be closed out at the end of last week, but it dragged into Monday, and even when there was a deal, there almost wasn't a deal.
Yeah, the devil is in the details, I guess. Well, I mean, it wasn't that granular, actually, the issues that came up. But, I mean, it seems like Wednesday, that would have been the 17th, I guess. Wednesday is when Arlington actually put out a release saying that they had an agreement. There wasn't a signed deal, but they were expected to sign a deal or some language like that. Because Thursday, the 18th, with the racing board meeting, regularly scheduled racing board meeting, and it was at that time that the agenda item regarding Arlington amending its race dates awards for 2020 was supposed to be addressed. But as you mentioned, that did not come to pass. There was quite a delay afterward.
Talk about how a deal was struck and the elements that, you know, that horse players and I imagine owners and horsemen are going to be most interested in, including the absence of a stakes program for 2020.
Well, yeah, there is that, the absence of a stakes program. I don't know what the purse structure is going to be like. I don't think anybody does yet. Part of that is, everything's just emerging from coronavirus shutdown. Illinois, Chicago, just there are five phases. Five is like back to pretty much normal. Things here have just entered phase four. And when phase three came about, I believe, that's when the OTBs were allowed to open. Now, Arlington has been slow to get its OTB network going on. I know that even through last weekend, they were minimally staffed. They weren't offering cash payouts for winning wagers. Some of them weren't open at all. I know I got the handle figures for the OTB networks from last Friday. And, you know, Arlington's had handled a pittance compared to Hawthorne's. And then Saturday was going to even be a greater discrepancy because it was Belmont Stakes Day. The reason for that, I assume, is that Arlington didn't know if they were going to have a meet, and they may not have wanted to staff up following all the furloughs that came about after coronavirus when everything shut down. I assume that's what the thinking was. But in any case, the point being, without a full network of OTBs and in somewhat uncertain wagering environment because of post-lockdown, I think that they're just kind of rough estimating the overnight purse levels that they're going to achieve. They do have the framework of the meet is 8 races a day, 3 days a week, July 23rd through September, whatever makes 30 days, 3 days a week, 10 weeks. Really, looking at it realistically, this backstretch is not open yet, and they don't have full permissions to open it. The timeline that was presented was sometime during the first week in July, whether that's July 5th or 6th or 7th. The backstretch stables will open, I don't imagine there's going to be like an overflow of horsemen waiting to get in. A lot of people made other plans already, you know, with the other Midwest tracks opening. But then there are people, I know Illinois people who have stayed at Tampa or have been, you know, keeping more horses elsewhere in hopes of this happening. So there will be, you know, several hundred horses that come on. Now, how much, if they can gather a critical mass to have a decent running meet, even for the limited time, I mean, I don't expect there to be large fields or anything. I do think that if they write races right, and, I mean, it just will be, I mean, they'll be going up against Ellis to some extent, which has been the usual, but there will be Kentucky shippers or, you know, people will ship around for the right races for their horses. Arlington still has a great turf course. It's got to be in the best shape ever for this time of year. First of all, there was a very wet May and very cool, and we haven't had that much hot weather, not many dry spells and not being used at all, but the turf is going to be awesome. And they can make a lot of use of that. I think maybe if I were them, I would be looking at just completely using that. And then you've got the whole, the polytrack element can be a benefit right now, too, because you do have a certain set of horses that prefer synthetics. And so you're looking at Woodbine, Presque Isle, or Arlington for the most part, and horses that are, you know, stabled in Minnesota or Iowa or Indiana or Ohio or Kentucky, who people think like an all-weather surface, you know, they'll get some of those horses, too. Now, just to continue this long monologue, next year, that was where the issues arose. The very sticky points of negotiations that bogged things down and threatened to derail them. Horsemen, I believe, wanted assurances that they were going to have, you know, a decent, sustainable overnight purse program without, you know, losing a lot of money to the open stakes program. I mean, for a long time, I think people looked at that as a double-edged sword. You increase national viability for your product and your market and get more eyes on your product, the better racing you have, and it makes you, you know, just get you to a certain level. But at the same time, if you're talking about, you know, kind of a financially strapped era where people don't have excess capital to throw around, then you start running into the question of, well, do I want to send more than $2 million out to probably out-of-town connections on a single day of racing when we've got, like, $9 million in the purse account in total for an entire racing season? So I think that was that's been a big point of conflict for a while, and it really came to the front of everything, I think, over the last couple months even. But what I understand to be worked out is there are thresholds for next year, depending on the amount of revenue generated for the purse account. You know, if the purse account, if they don't, I don't even want to get into recapture, it's so complicated, but that recapture clause that came in when full card simulcase passing arrived, and it was a way of compensating racetracks for money lost that live handle to simulcast wagering. It's capped at a certain level, and I think they pulled the cap down even a little more for next year because the less money they take in, the greater the recapture amount. The recapture just means that the track recaptures these supposed lost revenues by taking them right out of the purse account. So recapture just basically like defunds the racing product to the benefit of the track owner. And I'm not making a value judgment of that. That's just the way it works. So last recapture and less expenses that come out of the purse account to fund the local representative enforcement group, the ITHA, if they don't get to like $10 million or something like that, there won't be an open stakes program next year unless Arlington and Churchill Downs Incorporated, their parent company, decide to fund it on their own, which they very well might do if that happens. Also, if there's a graduated scale, if you get up between X and Y levels, then there's like $800,000 committed to the open stakes program, and anything they want to have above and beyond that comes from the track owner operator, track operator's pocket. So the shape of next year's meet and stakes program is TBD based on how much money is generated for the purse account starting in October of this year.
Well, I guess I, Marcus, I don't. I guess it. I guess it's a positive to some degree that there's going to be a meet. I mean, it's such a special place.
Exactly how I feel. It's kind of resigned. You know, it's great there's going to be a meet, but what does this mean? And what about after 2021? I mean, you know, CDI committed to racing at Austin through 2021 for the most part, and they do have other interests to protect, obviously, in the state. They have a majority share in Rivers Casino, which is currently the largest casino in the state, and they're in the bidding to open a casino in Waukegan, which was thought to be going to be a real windfall as well. And, you know, I would imagine that from a relations standpoint with the state, the bureaucracy and people generally, you know, they would want to fulfill their commitment to racing in 2020 and 2021. Which may have been at the heart of whatever concessions they made for this year and next year. But I don't have, deep insight into their plans. But I mean, to echo your tone of, yes, it's good for a core group of Chicago horsemen, but does this really make the market viable over the longer term? I mean, it may be... Small victories are good for racing generally, but I don't know what this means in the longer term.
And in the meantime, Hawthorne presses forward with their plans. And
in the long term. Go ahead.
No, that just, I mean, that the one certainty is that Hawthorne is digging their heels in and going forward, to their credit.
Yeah, I mean, the carrot dangled on a stick in front of them is the prospect of having a casino. As far as I know, I mean, the shutdown is, compromised the state bureaucracy. Their application for a casino license is still in process, as I believe it's Fairmont Park. But they did make applications for a casino last summer, and just to revisit for those who haven't been following the nuts and bolts of the Chicago racing landscape, to mix a metaphor, Arlington did not apply for a casino license last summer, which is kind of the source of all these issues. Hawthorne is deferring recapture and for this year and next year, and they can just take a different position regarding losing money in the short term on the racing product because of the reward that lies farther down the road when they'll have a casino that is presumably going to make up these deficits. And they do have a major deficit in their purse account right now. It's something that Arlington does not. Arlington is, I believe, close to zeroed out their purse account and have always been loath to overpay it. So I think that a lot of people, vis-a-vis the Hawthorne dynamic, are wondering, what's going to happen next year when these tracks go to apply with the racing board for 2021 dates. Is there going to be a major shift in who gets what number of dates and when? And this question of the being the dark horse track where you get the majority of revenues that are generated by simulcast wagers when there's not a track running. Arlington has traditionally soaked most of that up almost all the time, starting January 1st, their meet, which is seen rightfully so as the flagship meet of the state, and the whole system is best served by allowing them to generate more money. But maybe that dynamic shifts now with the way things have gone down. I mean, we do have to recall, too, that when these negotiations started in June or May, Arlington's first position was they couldn't run the meet without spectators at all, and a lot of people questioned, how interested they even were in having racing. So if that's their position, then do they get to maintain the status of getting the most money and the most economic benefit within this system that's been established?
Well, I appreciate it. I wanted everybody to be aware of what the status is at Arlington. No Father's Day, no fireworks, no Million, no Beverly D, et cetera.
Well, what's Chad Brown going to do? That's the question everyone's going to be asking. Well, I guess he'll survive.
Probably.
I guess what it means is he won't be winning that million to Beverly D and the Secretariat again this year.
Well, I imagine that there'll be some that'll run out of Del Mar with the
Del Mar's top end a little more with the way he splits these horses up. But everyone is facing complications this year the way things have shaken out.
And then some. Marcus, I want to shift gears. And before we talk about Ascot, I might as well stay with the domestic and the region. And we kicked off the Indiana season with Eric Alstrom, and we're going to handicap regularly and have been following with real interest, the Indiana pick five that they were hoping they were going to have the lowest takeout on a pick five in the country, but Canterbury came in late and snared that title. But some thoughts about the start of the Indiana meet.
Mine's 9%. I'm the lowest now.
the Marcus Hirsch five. I love it.
They're Indiana's pick five. I mean, that's kind of just neither here nor there whether you have the status of lowest anywhere. But I think that having the better show that there's going to be a huge positive response when you don't take as much of their money away. I mean, shockingly.
Some thoughts too, just in general about the start of the meet. I mean, the cards have been really approachable.
It's tough, I think, because a big part of the program is, especially right, it has been so far, is Indiana bred, and also, and this dissipated after opening week. They had a lot of Indiana sired restricted races. Which came about because of the opening of the sportsbook at the casino. And the sportsbook doesn't fund purses at all, but what is it? There's another facet to the sportsbook program, some game, that does fund purses. And so the uptick in business there, I believe that a larger percentage of that was meant to help support the Indiana Stallion program and develop the breeding industry. So we are going to see more sire-restricted races. I don't see PPs that have a distinction between these Indiana, like the breds and the sires, and it really is a meaningful distinction that would be helpful to have, from a data analysis point of view going forward. I hope that people, can figure out how that works. But anyway, back to the original point, a lot of those people with Indiana breds, if they might have had a string somewhere else, but they didn't have these horses somewhere else. So a huge percentage of horses in a lot of these races haven't run since November, October, September, August. I mean, it's challenging in that respect, trying to guess who has their horses ready. But also, looking at workout times is a little tricky too because the traffic was so slow for a while. I've noticed it sped up a little bit recently. Times yesterday were quicker in the afternoon and maybe works were a little faster. There have been times early in their seasons, but this isn't really early because of when they end up starting, when the inside's been bad. I haven't seen any super bias. I think that, in all dirt racing, being forwardly placed has been a positive thing, and I haven't noticed anything very particular with the dirt course profile either. But they get their field size has been astronomical, and not only do they have a full field area where they're talking about building another barn, they're getting a lot of shippers, obviously, from Kentucky too. And you got the low takeout pick five in big fields with like a chance for some chaos because of the dynamics right now. I think that's what you would call an appealing product.
There's no doubt. And, today I started to handicap the sequence, especially after yesterday. Somebody scooped that whole pool yesterday for 51,000. And I started looking, and it starts out with three straight maiden specials, and two of them Indiana breds. Not that that bothers me, but I thought that thought that that was just a little, maybe one too many maiden events. And then it ends with a maiden 16 as well, where there's some a lot of firsters mixed in. And I don't know. I thought I may work on tomorrow's instead. Tomorrow's looks
right.
Pretty nice,
now,
including a second
I
level.
I agree that, I mean, some people may feel differently, but you would like maybe at least one race where you felt like you had like more pillars of understanding, like arising from the form somehow. So, I mean, I think it's good to have potentially chaotic results mixed in around some things you think you understand. But some people may, I mean, I could also see taking the position where you try to, like, you believe you know something about one of these chaotic races, and then because there isn't as much, you know, firm ground, and you can hope to get a huge return.
A lot of that also then, you know, feeds into your budget, you know, and what you're willing, you know, to
Absolutely.
Invest in those spots.
Because otherwise, you're just stabbing if you don't feel like you can get proper coverage.
Exactly. Well, I, you know, you and I do talk about the Indiana Derby Oaks card 2 weeks from what? 2 weeks from tomorrow.
Is it that soon? It's the 14th.
Yes. Is it the? I thought it's the 8th. Isn't it the 8th?
I think it's maybe. Maybe I'm.
I think it's July
8th. I have to cover. Anyway.
2 weeks from 2 weeks from tomorrow.
Coming out of the Belmont, will run in there.
Exactly. So everything is upside down. Marcus Hirsch with us from the Forum. And Marcus, we had did some recapping yesterday with Nick Luck on Royal Ascot. You did some follow-up work with Wesley Ward. A couple of couple of thoughts about the week. We followed it closely and really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thought it was big fun. I mean, I think that maybe the biggest takeaway for me is John Gosden, after like dominating the kind of the top, I mean, maybe dominating the two-time awards. But if you look at the year-end awards, his horses won like a large percentage of the awards last year. And it looks like it could be happening in this year. It wasn't just Stradivarius winning by 10, but pretty much every horse that looked like they might be live in a group stakes race was. I mean, starting with the first stakes of the meet, he lost the Queen Anne by a nostril, the Terrabellum. And I thought it's frankly Darling, the three-year-old filly. I thought she looked really strong, like a real Oaks contender, and Lord North coming out of the handicap ranks to easily win the Prince of Wales, and he has a horse enabled back at the barn too, still waiting to run. So yeah, he looks like he's got an absolutely fabulous group of horses again in a lot of categories, and Rand and Wesley Ward, but he canceled 1 year because of rain. I didn't even ship his horses. He's going over there looking for a dry week, and he didn't get it. And after like some pretty poor performances Wednesday, which I think was totally unsurprising, his horses on Friday with Golden Pal and Kamari both ran winning type races, in my opinion, and just happened to find one better in circumstances. And then with Campanella on Saturday, we've come to expect it, but he did it again. He had three very live chances in races this week, and sharing as well. I thought that she ran as well as she could have. I just didn't think she picked up like she has in the past, maybe over that kind of ground she wasn't really used to. Kind of a groundswell, a backlash against the bucket list Royal Ascot impulse, which I think is more than just a bucket list thing for a lot of people. I think that's maybe selling it short. And I guess I couldn't even understand the backlash, but I don't know. just such a different type of racing, and I can completely get behind wanting to be involved in it. And I think that what we're seeing is if people are judicious about the selections they make and going over there, and things go well, the horses travel decently, they can absolutely be competitive, which is great to see.
What did Wesley tell you about staying on with you got a piece up yesterday about maybe a couple going forward, and Wesley's done this before successfully. And it's funny, I you think about Kamari with a better break and Golden Pal getting caught late, he could have won three races very easily.
I love Kamari. I think Kamari is fabulous. He blamed the break as much as anything, and I heard a lot of I did hear several English commentators, or at least a couple, and then read it as well, like, oh, it was surprising she broke badly, because they have in mind, his two-year-old, who usually show a lot of speed and race from the front. But that's her. She's been bad starting all along. I feel like if it would have been a nice, good, firm kind of force, she still might have been able to make up the ground. But it's just when it gets a little sticky like that, it seems definitely the blunt horse is brilliant. Anyway, I guess you could say they have high hopes for her, since they're working back from the Breeders' Cup sprint, depending. But she's one of those rare horses who seems to, just run on anything. I think she's really good, and I look forward to seeing what she's going to do. And then, you mentioned the two-year-olds are going back. That's the plan. Cabanel to France with Prix Mornay, which Leslie's done before, and then Golden Pal to the Nunthorpe, which is a 5-furlong race, open to two-year-olds. Well, I think the two-year-olds get 25 pounds from the older male horse, and he did that with Acapulco, who finished second. And Lady Aurelia ran in that race as a 3-year-old, I believe, and also finished second to Marcia. So Wesley has Nunthorpe experience, and I think Irad Ortiz is supposed to ride the horse, because he can presumably do the low weight that Golden Pal will be assigned. There was a lot of I've seen a lot of, Wesley isn't winning races at the same level chatter this spring, which is, kind of understandable, since his program is so geared around early two-year-olds, and it was the early two-year-old portion of the season that was thrown into utter chaos by coronavirus. There was no Keeneland. Keeneland two-year-olds, that's Wesley Ward's bread and butter, in addition to a number of other things. I think that he probably felt pretty satisfied with the way his horses performed last week in England.
And I would think so. And for Stone Street, pretty special. It was overall an outstanding, I thought, 5 days. Really fun. Sharing's performance. I don't know what more, other than winning and somehow, maybe, I don't know. Do you think by chance that with a little bit of a different ride, Murphy can get her there? Or did Frankie just, have the jump and the timing and the trip?
I doubt she is beating that horse the way that horse ran in that race. I see what you're saying a little bit. She took the overland route, but just watching the way she traveled through the home stretch and speaking to Graham Motion yesterday, he somewhat validated what I thought I was seeing. Just that, I thought it looked like she was really trying hard and just couldn't. She accelerated, but it's kind of happening in slow motion for her. I just think that she's probably unsurprisingly, being an American horse, a top of the ground kind of horse, who might have had a much better chance if I don't think the course was especially soft, but I guess sticky is the word people were using a lot, and that probably compromised her ability to turn her legs over a little faster.
And the uphill. I had Graham on yesterday as well, and you know, he talked a little bit about the, you know, the uphill aspect.
Well, that is a big thing, isn't it? Even if they stay, just the process of going through it is so unlike what American horses are accustomed to. Like the way that it must feel to the horse, you know, coming into the closing stages and then having to, you know, not just with the fatigue factor, but staying balanced, and also like the way the manner of exertion is different. So, I mean, I think that's what makes it so challenging as much as anything is the undulations. Because, I mean, if you think about what horses go through during a race, being taken out of the right feeling, I mean, it's got to be a lot to overcome physically and mentally, I think, for these horses. I think that's what makes it so impressive. I mean, going from Europe to America, sure, going around turns and on a flat left-handed track, isn't it? It requires adaptation, but I think it's a much easier adaptation than going from the American track to a European-style track, for sure.
Well, another successful trip for American Horsemen and American connections to Royal Ascot.
And, yeah, and a successful meet just in terms of the consciousness yeah. of American horse players, and with good reason. I mean, I think the more people, you know, have a chance to dive into these races and do some homework, the field size, the competitive nature of them, the way they look unfolding. I mean, I think people are more ready than ever now to embrace this sort of thing that's outside of their comfort zone.
Agreed. And I think part of this also, Marcus, I mean, we talked several times, at least a couple of times through the pandemic, about places like Will Rogers and Fauner and
then
Australia.
The Royal Ascot of Oklahoma, they call it.
That's yes, yes. And, of course, Fair Meadows, the new market. Of Oklahoma.
It's a new market. I thought it was the Yarmouth.
It could be, or the Lingfield, yes. Too funny. Marcus, I covered a lot of ground here. I appreciate it, as always, and I guess you will be able
see
to make a few trips to Arlington Heights. Yeah, see you at the 100 grand.
Or not.
or not. Marcus Hirsch, everybody. And Marcus, we'll do some more Indiana, because we're regularly connecting with Eric and his team again this year.
Some oh, good. Downs keep me updated on the Indiana Derby date so I don't miss it.
So you don't miss it? You're going to go down?
Oh,
excellent.
No, I mean, covering it. Yeah.
Oh, all right. All right. When was the last time you were at a track physically? And was it
Fairgrounds?
Fairgrounds?
In February.
Risen Star.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I know. I was at Belmont this week, and it just, you know,
oh,
just
nice.
Nice to be out there. Yeah, so.
Excellent.
DRF Hirsch, everybody. Marcus Hirsch. He's covering the international scene and, of course, for years, Chicagoland and more in Mid-America, and his handicapping stylings at several other ovals as well. Marcus, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Marcus Hirsch. We'll take a break here, and a little past the bottom of the hour, so we're a little past halfway. Call it 100 minutes in and 80 to come. Christophe Clement coming, and Andy Serling, and Neil Drysdale, and more. Back after this at the races, SiriusXM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Rhythm is a dancer, it's a soul's companion. People feel it everywhere. Lift your hands and voices, free your mind and join us. You can feel it in the air.
We're back at the races, about 15 minutes to the top of the hour. Andy Serling is going to join us after we talk right now to Christophe Clement. And Christophe joins us on the heels of the weekend where the outstanding three-year-old turfer, Decorated Invader, absolutely sent a shot across the division's bow. Christophe, congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
Chris, this feels like an exceptionally talented colt. Talk a little bit about how he's come along and about Saturday.
So we always liked him even as a two-year-old. I was a touch disappointed. He got beat first time out, but he did actually run a very good race. He came back and won second time out. Third race, he won the Grade One in Canada. He trained remarkably well for the Breeders' Cup. I thought he had no racing luck whatsoever when we went over there. It was painful. He got beat four lengths, and even today, I still think he was the best horse in the race. We gave him some time off, came back at Gulfstream, impressive, came back at Belmont, impressive. He's a top-class horse. My job is just to give him a career and to keep him, problem-free and to be sure he can have the racing career that he deserves.
I thought what was notable about this performance, he has been, for the most part, coming from off the pace and running into, you know, fast paces. But in this particular case, Joel had him, you know, fairly tucked up behind. I mean, it wasn't a big field, but Joel made sure that he wasn't, you know, going to be left with too much to do if the pace wasn't there. I'm getting the sense that with each passing start, Chris, that he's getting more tractable, and this feels like a horse that
mature, which is normal. He's getting older, yeah, and more mature, which is great because it makes it easy. The plan would be to stretch him now. You got the two races in Saratoga going a mile and an eighth, which is the Hall of Fame, or the mile and 3:16, which is the Saratoga or the Summer Derby in mid-August. You know, the question is, does he want to go that far? I'm not 100% sure, but we're going to try, that's for sure.
Now, and being a declaration of war, I mean, how much, out of an archmare, how much of it is a getting to know you process? Is this the first declaration of war probably you had your hands on?
I don't one or two before. I can't really remember. So I've got two very nice 3-year-olds this year. We've got, you know, obviously a Declaration of War, and I've got another called Goofo, who's a very nice horse by Declaration of War.
Yeah.
So we've been lucky with him.
Well, decorated Invader, Joel Rosario had a good weekend, and this is obviously at this point the leader in the 3-year-old male division, and plenty of opportunities. We did find out yesterday one opportunity that won't be there is the Secretariat. We just talked to Marcus Hirsch of the Forum, Chris, about what's going on at Arlington for the year. But the 3-year-old options at Saratoga, very much, I imagine, in everybody's on everybody's agenda, for West Point, it's nice to have this kind of a horse.
You know, absolutely. He's a fun horse for all of us to be involved. West Point as an owner, but even me as a trainer, has been, since Gioponti, I don't think I had a horse quite that good as a 3-year-old on the turf. Tonalis was top class, but he was a dirt horse. So, no, it's fun. It's nice, and that helps you to wake up in the morning, yeah?
Yeah. Well, and, I think I've got to mention to be given West Point's association with the barn, and I speak for everybody, for players and fans, Chris, expressing, the sadness associated with the van accident.
That's very kind of you. It was obviously as bad as it gets. So it's nice to have a day with a win like Decorated Invader afterwards, just to show that sometimes there's also some positive in life.
Well, and even going back to 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, you won later that day, everybody's spirits had to be lifted a little. It just was something so so extraordinary and tragic.
I'm lucky at the moment. Also, I've been running well at Belmont, so we try to. You have to try to focus on positive thinking, otherwise you don't go forward.
Exactly.
But let's just focus on the Belmont meet, and we'll try to run and to win as many races as we can.
Talk a little bit about some of the other stakes performers going back to Saturday, and Pure Sensation got into a speed...
He came back pretty slow after his race behind, so we've got to monitor that. He's not lame, he's stiff and sore, so we've got to monitor that. I thought White Flag finished fifth in the dry pool, but he actually ran very well. He got beat to Lance for third. I was happy with the performance. We will find an easy race next time. And then we got a fee called Speak to Me of Summer, who finished fourth in the Wonder again. Maybe not quite that good, and also winning first time out this year might have needed the race. You know, it will be interesting to see the morning breeze, how much improvement we get, and then we can go from there.
And also, going back to White Flag for a second, I thought that there was a little bit of a look to him in there, and I didn't think he ran badly at all. I think there's a win. There's a win coming soon.
Yeah, I mean, to tell you the truth, six against top horses is not too short. On the waiver, he's taken for speed, but he finished very well. Another 16 of a mile is right there. So it would be great to find a 7-8 race, which we don't have in New York. There used to be a stakes in the summer called the Play the King at Woodbine, so I need to have a look at that. And I just need to be creative,
Well, you also, of course, came within a few jumps, it seemed, with She's My Type on Sunday in the Lady Shipman, and Graham's filly, you know, had gotten the jump, I think, on everybody, and She's My Type chased her home.
Without taking anything away from the winner, it was a nice winner. She had a dream trip. She was in second position of the way. She opened up. I thought our filly went very well. She closed and just could not make up quite that much ground. I would have loved also to finish third with a filly who finished fourth in order to get a black type called Notorious RBG. But both of them came well. She's My Type, probably will come for a stakes sprinting in Saratoga. And Notorious RBG, I might take her to another race like at Mammoth, short on the turf as well.
Chris, let's also look ahead to the weekend. Feel Glorious, is she still on track for the Justing Aim?
No, I'm going to go for the New York Handicap, believe it or not.
Okay.
I studied the two races. I think Feel Glorious best probably is a mile 16 to a mile 8. She has not run for 6 months. She's training great. One race, an amazing tough race, which is just a game with Uni and some top-class fillies. So my gut feeling is to go at the moment for the New York Handicap, in which we are planning to run two fillies, Call Me Love and Feel Glorious. It's ambitious, but I think we have a better chance to perform there. Than I think the mile and a quarter would be a better fit for them than the mile. And I could be wrong.
The mile just too sharp, little sharp off the comeback?
Too sharp, and you've got also 5-6 years old mare who are very, very well proven to be like the best in the countries, where the New York Handicap is to touch more open, you know, on paper.
I like it. All right, I'm glad I asked because I had her as a.
Yeah, the only thing which would change my mind for any reason, the forecast changed and with some rain in the forecast Friday and Saturday, that could make me change my mind. Otherwise, I'd stick with just being a man in the corner.
Tell us, going back to Friday, I want to ask you about the Waterville Lake filly, the Pioneer of the Nile, the four-year-old Coilene Bond.
She trained very well. She won. Her best breeds were the last two breeds. Actually, breeds there with a New York bred filly, which belongs to one of the partners called Fresco, who is also running this week. And I thought twice Coilene Bond worked very well, finished very well. She looks like very dominant in the work at every stage of the work. So I was happy that she raced, you know, the way she raced according to Morning Breeze, which does not always happen, as you know. So it was nice to see the win.
Well, the weekend led, of course, by the stake win. Chris, how are you coming along with two-year-olds for the summer?
I think we've got a good group. I've got two, you know, we had two two-year-olds last week in, which I liked. And one of them at the high temperature 3 days before the race, the filly had to scratch that. And then the colt started coughing like mad also the last 2 or 3 days before the race, which was disappointing. I thought both of them trained very well. It was both of them New York brand. But that's okay. We will bring them back. And we've got plenty more coming over the next 2 weeks. So, and I'm pretty excited about the two-year-old.
Well, I love it. What about Casino Grand coming up on Thursday in the Easy Goer?
I've got a question mark because everything was great. And I worked him a few days ago and I saw the work was flat and I don't understand why. So I'm monitoring everything at the moment. We took a full blood on him. We're checking him out to be sure we're not making a mistake. He's usually been a very good workhorse all his life. So I'm a little bit puzzled and I don't want to make a mistake. So I've got a small, you know, at the moment I would say question mark.
Interesting. All right, and then
the ones that we're not running.
Okay, and how about the New York bred Oak Bluffs homebred, the Freud filly Fresco, coming back for the third start?
So she's a full sister to Therapist. I like her. I thought she was a bit unlucky at Gulfstream. I'm running her back a bit shorter. She's the one I've been working with, Colin Bone. So it's a good line. So let's go. I might just work it out. We've got a bad draw, and just you know, I train them. He's got to ride them. That's the way it is.
What? How about recent winner going back to last weekend? Shamrocket, the Tonalist 3-year-old colt breaks through.
Yeah, that is a nice horse, improving type. I've always thought the Gulfstream was too short for him, but he exploded going a mile and a quarter in New York. I like him. You know, we'll keep him in longer distance, and then we'll go from there.
Excellent. We talked. Call Me Love is going to run.
Call Me Love will go for the New York Handicap.
This weekend.
I ran with Mark.
Right.
Phil Glorious running the New York Handicap with the Junior Alvarado. I'm excited to see them run, and then we go from there.
Well, and you also, you already talked, you mentioned the sister, a therapist sister, and of course, therapist with the, you know, with the win, 2 weeks ago. And
so you got two choices for therapists. You have two stakes for New York bred coming up, one called the Kingston, it's a mile and a 16th, and then they have a new New York bred stakes, which goes 6 furlongs on a turf, I think called the Bandrock. I don't know. I'm going to speak to Ivan about it. My gut feeling is to go for the 6 furlong race more than the mile and 16 race.
Hmm.
But I just want to be sure that Ivan agrees with the plan.
Excellent. Well, Christoph, it feels like it's going to be a terrific summer. And coming up as soon as this weekend, and we got 2 more weeks, and everything will shift up to Saratoga. You have a beachhead established? You got some of the horses up here already?
Yes, I am actually in Saratoga right now, and I train all the 2 years all the year. They look good. I'm excited, and I'll drive back to Belmont tomorrow. And that's my weekly routine, which is I drive every Monday morning or a Sunday night to Saratoga, and I come back on Wednesday afternoon to Belmont Park.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Chris, congratulations again on Decorated Invader. We'll see you over there. We'll see you at Saratoga soon enough.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot. Good luck.
Christoph Clement, everybody. You can follow Chris on Twitter as well. I'm not sure. Not exactly sure, Case, what the thought is here, but it's only 11 o'clock. Yeah, it was pretty good. Yeah, the morning's going fast, Casey, but not that fast. That was great. I heard that threw me off too, because I could hear the couple of things in the background, and I thought, wait a minute, Casey's ending the show early. No, we're going to take a break though, and we'll come back. Andy Serling gets us into hour three after this.
Racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Race Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit Thoroughbred